Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone, and welcome to Come for Supper. I'm Alexandra Dudley, food writer, cook, and serial dinner party host. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who share that love for food, chat about life, and learn a little bit more about how they like to serve supper. I speak to chefs, restaurateurs, artists, actors, authors, and pretty much anyone who likes to entertain. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy it, rate it, review it, share it, and tell your friends, as it makes all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Joining me in the studio today is a wonderful chef. Having started his career in a local bakery, he climbed the ranks working under the likes of Marc-Pierre White and Michel Roux Jr. He is now chef patron of three of his own restaurants and has also written three cookbooks. Having famously won Great British Menu in 2006, he is now a regular on our televisions, on Saturday Kitchen and more, and has also starred in his own show, Bren's Kitchen. Welcome to the studio, Bren Williams.
Thank you.
Hello, and how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
I'm very well. Where have you come from on this slightly wet
afternoon? Very wet. Well, I left Odette's in Primrose Hill. It was sunny. Well, I wouldn't say sunny. It wasn't raining. Got out on Old Street. Checking it down.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's what it's East London for you. Isn't
is that
it?
What
it's
is
just
it?
Wet and grey. So thank you for being here. So let's go back to the very beginning when you were a very young boy. I know that you fell in love with food at a very early age.
Yes.
What was it in particular? Was there a kind of moment?
I think connections of food was very early on. So coming from a farming culture, farming background, family. So I never actually lived on a farm, but all my relatives are farmers. My dad used to live on a farm, decided not to go down that path. He was more a mechanic. Mm-hmm. But farming was in our blood. So quite often as a kid, I'd go down to my uncle's farm. He'd have a farm shop selling fruit and veg, using milk. So I was always there every weekend with my dad, so my brothers. So we used to plant potatoes, go and pick potatoes. I remember one summer, you know, getting my mum's nerves. I'm one of three boys, so you can imagine the summer holidays driving your mum crazy. She sent us down to the farm, go and pick some potatoes. We go and pick them, we throw half them at each other, you know, wasting food, all the rest of it. Go home, give them to my mum. 2 hours later, we'd be eating them. But we took that for granted because we come from the countryside. Yeah. And I think when people think we need to change what we do, we don't need to change. We need to do what we used to do. Mm-hmm. Is go back to the how life used to be in some quarters. So food is, you know, I remember, I don't think I had milk out of a container until I was 11.
Wow.
We used to go to the farm, get a big, it was a 4 litre, you can imagine a jug, a 4 litre plastic jug full of milk.
Heavy,
warm.
Warm.
And you'd have a bit of foam on top of it, so you had your own cappuccino on your breakfast. So living in North Wales, you know, you were just always around food. And we took it for granted, as I said. But then growing up as a kid, we first went to a local bakery, like you touched in the intro. And that was it. I was hooked on bread. So I remember, I don't remember much in primary school, but I remember walking to the bakery, hand in hand with a girl called Fionn. I remember it. I was, you know, you had to...
I remember that, holding hands.
Holding that.
Yeah, you had just two by two, exactly.
Yeah, got there, made bread. Didn't win a competition, but that was one of the best ones, and I just loved it ever since that. And then my father always says, I was going on about him every week, every weekend, I want to go to the bakery. So I remember my dad walking me into the bakery when I just started high school, said, can you please give him a job because he's getting on my nerves. So I got into the bakery, 60p an hour.
60p an hour. 60,
that's
wow.
How old I am. I don't know if I'm really old or slave labour. I'm not sure which one it is.
Both, I think.
I remember brushing a floor, making cups of tea, making coffee, carrying a bread.
In the bakery?
In a bakery.
Did you do kind of normal shifts? Because
no,
I've worked in a bakery, and I started at kind of 4am, but I doubt, would they let you do that when you were
young? No, when I was 12, I started at 9 o'clock till 1 o'clock. But as I got older, I was there at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Those hours
I just
got
loved
rapier.
It. Yeah, and yeah. I just, my love of food really came from the bakery and Alvin Thomas mm-hmm. and Denby. Just his passion, his enthusiasm to teach people, to show people. It was amazing. So that's when my real passion for food came about.
Okay. And then you went on to catering college in Wales as
in
well.
In Wales, in Cambridge.
And then worked under some pretty legendary chefs.
Yeah.
For quite a long time. You worked with Marco for 3 years.
3 years, yeah. I'm a sticker for punishment.
I was going to ask, yeah, what was it like?
Do you know what? It's a little bit...
There's some big personalities
it's
there.
It's a big personality, and I think... I remember leaving. I worked for a chef called Carl Swift in a restaurant called Cafe Nizwa mm-hmm. in Colburn Bay. And it was two of us in a kitchen. The kitchen was half the size of this room. We were feeding 20 people a night. And he'd worked for Raymond Blanc.
Okay.
So the food that we were
good
doing.
Stock.
Yeah, it was very good stock. The food that we were doing was completely different to what was in North Wales. I thrived on that kind of, you know, attention to detail working with him. He saw something in me. I remember that when the caterer came out one day, Marco Pirro, I was looking for chefs. So Carl literally, he phoned the number, gave me the phone. Quite
wow.
So I remember talking to Roger Pisey, the executive pastry chef, just said, just want to learn, just want to see. So I went there for 3 years. I just like work.
Was that the criterion?
Yeah,
yes.
It was the criterion. I just think there's some great chefs being through that kitchen.
Yeah.
And what you learned in that kitchen, you know, you'd pay him, if I'm honest, you know, in this day, you know, what you've gained from it. You know, there's a lot to be said about putting yourself in a position that others don't want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you work long hours, yes, it was tough, but you know what? It's a bit like a Stockholm syndrome when you're leaving and you're thinking, am I doing the right thing? Because it was that hard work in there. But yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Loved it. Yeah. Has he been to your restaurants?
No. I don't think he... I don't think... If I walked past him, I don't think he'd recognise me. But
oh, you never know.
You never know.
You never know. And then you went on to do the Great British Menu in 2006. I do
yes.
know that. Did you feel fazed by the idea of cooking on television? Because you were still quite green then.
I was
like,
very
say.
Green. I was. Do you know what? I said no about three times to this.
Really?
Yes, because I'd worked at Gavish for 3 years. Worked at Marco Pay for 3 years. Then moved on to the Gavish for 3 years. So maybe I was a little bit above my station thinking, you know, it's all about the craft, all
yeah,
about
yeah.
the food. And that time of year, 2005, 2006, Big Brother was all out. All that kind of yeah. new TV programs.
And Great British Menu was young. It was
the first series. First series.
Yeah, so nobody's first or second.
Nobody's seen it yet. And there's a lot of Big Brothers, all that kind of reality programs going on. I just thought, you know, I've not done 6-7 years of my life to learn my trade, just to not piss up the wall, but to disrespect your trade.
Yeah,
I didn't want to
that.
Do it. So I moved to the Orrery in Marylebone High Street, working with Tevez Conran and Chris Galvin. And then the restaurant manager one day said, oh, you're Welsh. I said, yeah, I am. He goes, oh, we have a Welsh customer here. She mentioned to me that they're doing a new TV programme called Great British Menus. Can she phone you? And I went, yeah, fine, whatever. And then 6 months went by, no phone calls. The seventh month, I get a phone call. Would you do this TV programme? She personally explained it, but the production team explained it. You're cooking against, there's a competition element, you get voted by the public. And the minute voting by the public, I was out. I was like, no, you're okay, I don't want to do that. And then 3 or 4 times after, I got asked again, are you sure? I said, no. I said, you are representing Wales. I said, I don't care. And then to top it all off, Pat Llewellyn, she sadly passed away mm-hmm. 18 months ago. She was the owner with her husband Ben of Optum TV. So she founded Two Fat Ladies, Hairy Bikers, Jamie, the first Welsh girl. So it's funny how the people say the Welsh mafia in London is very dominant, which is very true. She phoned me up speaking Welsh, saying, you need to do this programme. She spilt the beans and said, who's doing it? And then that's how I did it, and then I never looked back.
Because you were cooking against Angela.
Yeah.
I may have watched some of those old clips this morning. Yeah,
I had,
very feisty. You
was
two.
I
great
I
with each
thinner,
other. Well,
more hair.
You were both younger.
Yeah, both very younger. Yeah, yeah. But I think I was 28. I wasn't even a head chef; I was a sous chef at the time. And cooking against Angela, you know, she's an amazing chef. And you just think, do what I'll do it, see what happens, and yeah, the rest is history.
I bet it was fun. Was it fun?
Do you know what? It was fun because nothing had been on TV like that before. You didn't realise the consequences of it. You just thought, do you know what? I'm going to go on, I'm going to cook, do my stuff, And whatever and happens, happens. I think now when people do a lot of TV, you know, social media, there's people being judged. So it was completely carefree, if I'm honest, because it was all about the food, which what it should be in, in a cookery competition cookery show, or cookery programme. Yeah.
Okay, so let's chat about entertaining. Do you like to entertain? Do you have much time? You probably don't have much time.
My wife would say you'll cook for 10 people or more, but never for me.
So you do, okay. Yeah. So entertaining trumps. That's good. I like that. So what's a bit of a kind of signature dish for you then when you're entertaining? Just with kind of loose friends, like relaxing.
Loose friends.
Evening.
Quite often it'll be a shoulder of lamb cooked over boulanger potato, so all the fat drips into the potato. Simple green salad with a load of chopped mint and spring onions into it. And
that's I love mint and salad.
And some nice bit of bread and a bottle of red.
Yeah.
So if my friends come around, they sort of know.
They know what they're getting.
They know what they're getting. It's going to be middle of the table. Help yourself.
Nice.
It might be braised beef with the boulanger potatoes, but things in the middle of the table, I can prepare it, leave it, help yourself.
Yeah, and host. Yeah. I think it's all about that kind of bung it in the oven situation.
Yes,
as
I think
well.
So. Because when you start plating this, you might as well be in work.
Yeah, well, exactly, especially you know, for you.
Yeah.
What about pudding?
Pudding, ooh, yeah, normally it varies really. I've got into massively at the moment steam puddings with golden syrup and custard, that kind of really hearty.
Gosh, that's old school.
It's proper old school, but I don't know,
it's got to be done well, that otherwise it's kind of gives me a bit weird, hideous nightmares.
My dad said to me once, said,
spotted dick and stuff.
Exactly that. Goes, can you do me spotted dick? And I said, oh, okay, I'll look at it. But I did it with steam sponge pudding instead.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
If he was happy.
I was happy. It was absolutely beautiful.
Okay.
It's getting that lightness, getting that, you know, baking powder, nice and light, golden syrup on the bottom, steam it for a couple of hours, and then a nice homemade custard. I just think, don't plate anything up at home. It's in the middle of the table, you do.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm not there to work. I'm there to cook, not to work.
And then what about if you were kind of really trying to impress? Maybe if you were kind of cooking for the Queen again, what would you cook? And you were plating probably
were
this plate. Time.
I think scallops or something like that. You know, I'm a big sucker for scallops. So scallops cooked raw, you know, whatever, you know, sliced whole.
Crudo.
Yeah, just back in the shell, baked or anything scallops really.
Scallops. Do you kind of dive for your own scallops?
I do, yeah. As you mentioned before, I had a TV series on S4C in the Welsh language. We went diving for scallops. Which I'd never done before, and we dived in Pwllheli up in North Wales, and I got some like 24, 25 scallops in a space by half an hour. And I said to the producer, listen, I've never caught scallops before, and I certainly haven't cooked scallops when they're only an hour out of the water. So we were supposed to be on our lunch break. We went to the local petrol station, bought a barbecue, you know, the little disposable barbecues. We sat on the beach, I opened them and I cooked them in the shells. It was one of the best scallops.
Did you do it on film?
On film.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant.
So series one of Kegging Bryn, which is Bryn's Kitchen in English.
I was going to try and pronounce that in the intro, and I thought Kegging I'd best
Bryn.
Leave it to you.
Okay. But they're
Kegging
beautiful.
Bryn.
Just cooking scallops, literally they were no more than an hour old out of the water.
Just with that bit of butter.
Just a bit of garlic butter. I did some chaviche, just salt, lemon juice, olive oil, and just let them sit for a minute, so yum
delicious.
Is one big word for it.
So I think a lot of people shy away from entertaining for fear of messing up in the kitchen. Do you have any tips for the novice cook?
Yeah, massive. I think my wife did it the other day, which is a schoolboy. Why do something you've never done before?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. Don't inviting your friends and family over is not time to experiment. It's a time to not, you can sort of say show off. So know what you're cooking. So if your signature dish is a bolognese, just do the best bolognese you possibly can. And then grow from there. Don't do anything you haven't done before. And I always think a cold starter.
Yeah, I always think a cold starter.
If you've got any friends like mine, there's always one about 40 minutes late.
Yeah.
His name's Matty Lloyd, which is my friend. He's always late. So there's no point doing a hot starter. It'll be cold. So start off with a cold starter. Have the main course done and resting, and then a dessert in a big, big bowl. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Any kind of top cold starters, the go-tos?
Ooh, at the moment, we're getting into the spring and all that. So asparagus, I always think, is a good one.
Yes,
you can do a big, big platter and just put everything on a big platter and just share it all. And then people help themselves.
Yeah.
I don't put anything on a plate.
It gets the conversation going as well,
And people start sharing it. And then if somebody doesn't like, for instance, I didn't realise one of my best friends doesn't like mushrooms. I didn't need that.
Mushrooms, a lot of people don't like mushrooms, you know.
But when you've been on skiing holidays, weekends away, you really don't know your friends as much as you think you do, unless you sit around the table. So I use I think I did like a mushroom salad and, and he's picking out all the mushrooms and I realised, you don't like mushrooms? He goes, no, I ate them. I said, okay, fine. So by putting something in the middle of the table, you get to know
what people like,
what they like, and their dislikes as well. Yeah. So they just leave it to one side.
Have you got any dislikes?
I'm not big on offal, if I'm honest. Offal, if I cook it myself,
yeah,
that's fine. But offal, if I go out for offal, I'll
pass. Decide.
I'll pass on it, yeah.
Okay. Favourite ingredient?
Ooh. I go back to scallops. Scallops is one of my favourite ingredients. Yeah, okay. Just one of those things. And I think, you know, any slow cooked meat, you know, like a pork belly or a lamb shoulder, even an oxtail, boned out oxtail and stuffed with a farce and rolled and cooked slowly. Those kind of labour of love kind of dishes. I love that kind of cooking.
Okay. Your second book, The Love of Veg, great title, by the way, I love that.
Yeah.
Which celebrates kind of, it's not vegetarian, but it does kind of celebrate putting vegetables at kind of the heart of the table. What is it about vegetables and that make you excited? What's your ethos there?
You have to think a lot harder. Yeah. And I think when you're growing up as a chef, you always want to get onto the meat or the fish. You want to bypass the
veg. You want to get out of the salad section.
Yes, you want to get past that. You want to bypass the veg section.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, as a kid growing up, I used to think, I don't mind doing the veg, because I gave that section as much attention and detail and love as I did meat or fish. So this only really happened when I bought when I opened a debt 12 years ago. You'd see people not that interested in cooking vegetables, and you think, well, why? Well, I want to do the meat or fish. Yeah, but what's the point of having a great piece of meat or fish if the vegetables are not cooked that well? And the penny starts to drop with, I won't say kids, but with young chefs. So for me, the ethos is always, if you've got to give all my restaurants, we cook the veg with the same amount of attention to detail as we do meat or fish, and the same respect. And I think when you do that, vegetables come part of the plate, not a little side dish on the plate. So I'm not vegetarian myself, but I could easily be vegetarian if somebody cooks it with a bit of love and a bit of design, a bit of passion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you seeing more kind of vegetarian or plant-based diners coming into the restaurant?
Yes. You know, we in Odette's, we have a vegetarian tasting menu. Quite often, you know, you sell maybe 30% of the vegetarian. Yeah, quite a lot. And then I started off when this happened about 3-4 years ago, asking, oh, are you vegetarian? No, I'm not. I just want to be something a bit lighter. So I've stopped asking people now if they're vegetarian or not. Some people just want a lighter meal, or they just think, you know, the carbon footprints with all the beef and all the rest of it, which I tend to disagree with in some forms, but they just want a lighter dish and be a bit more healthier. You know, if we get all the beef rather than, I'm going to say all the beef, the entire animal, if we use it all up and stop flying avocados all over the world all the rest
and
of it.
And getting beef from New Zealand.
Yeah, I'm using Meduca honey, thinking that's okay because it's honey, but it's still on the same plane. So it doesn't have a private jet coming over, so it's on the same plane as the beef. So I just think we got to look a bit more sensible. And like going back to the first conversation, people used to eat from nose to tail.
Yeah.
That was not a gimmick. It wasn't fashionable. It's what they did because they had to. And I think now people can go, no, I only eat breast of chicken or just a fillet of beef. You go, what about the rest of the animal? No, I don't want it. That's the problem, I think.
Yeah, I think it's about respecting food, really, isn't it? And it's in its entirety.
Yes.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So what about disasters? Because I think even the best cooks have had them. Can you tell me about it? It can be in the kitchen, it can be at home, it can be on TV.
I remember one of the biggest disasters I had as a kid, and that's, this is my biggest one. When I was working in the pub in North Wales, we had a wedding on, and we made croquette potatoes. So you make like a soft mashed potato, you roll it in flour, egg, and breadcrumbs, and you deep fry it. So I remember the head chef saying to me, "Yeah, but when you get it right, yes, it's
really
delicious."
Good.
He said, "Make sure you do a tester of it." So what he meant by that, you make one portion up, deep fry it to make sure it doesn't fall apart, make sure it's got enough butter in it or not too much butter, it's seasoned, all the rest of it. Being a young chef, I'm also being a little bit cocky as well, like we all do, didn't do a tester on it. So we go to the main course now, right, potatoes in, they all just fall apart. So we had to, the head chef, and I can remember the words he said to me, which I can't really repeat, but we had to put it, all the potatoes. So you can imagine I spent all morning doing this. So we put them in the deep fryer, it was just like water. So we had to put them all back in a pan, heat it up like you would a mashed potato with all these breadcrumbs in it, then put a load of breadcrumbs on top of it, then stick underneath the grill. So that was one of my biggest disasters. And it was somebody's wedding as well.
Oh my gosh. And I bet they didn't even notice.
Do you know what? Most, they knew they were getting these potatoes,
Yeah.
But must have been in the enjoyment of all and just got married, didn't even notice.
Yeah, and I bet they still tasted great.
But the rude awakening I got, oh my God. So that is one of my biggest things. And I always say now to any young chef, do a tester.
Yeah, always test it.
I will always tell that story. Because you might think you're okay, but if you're safe, do a tester.
I have a similar situation. I remember cooking fish cakes for this big supper club, and I was cooking for 50 people in a pub that I'd never cooked in. So it was a foreign kitchen. Yeah. I was using their room upstairs, and I had this one kind of food critic person who was coming who couldn't eat, I think it was chili or something, and I was making these kind of fish cakes, but they were almost like a fish kofta.
Yeah, okay.
It was pretty much just fish.
Just fish, no breakfast.
And egg. Egg was binding it, that was it. And I'd made this specific separate one for her that didn't have any chili in because they were kind of spiced with the chamoula. And I only had one, and that was it. And I put it in the pan, and it just fell apart. And I just didn't know what to do. I had to go up and kind of apologise, and then just serve this kind of deconstructed.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Deconstructed fish cake. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you. Always try it.
Check. Always test what you do. Never be that confident that everything that you do turns to gold, because it doesn't always.
And things always go wrong. I always say, whenever there's a big thing going on, there will always be some sort of hiccup.
Yeah, always.
Just kind of have to roll with it.
And how you deal with it. But sometimes, if you only had one,
you've
left yourself no option to do anything. So yeah, always have a backup as well. Yeah.
So what about most memorable kind of dinner parties or meals? Kind of what's been your most memorable dining experience?
I remember one of the greatest dinners I've had is out in Guy Savoir in Paris.
When you were working in France, were you working in Paris?
No, I worked in Nice, in Hotel Agrisco in Nice.
Very nice as well.
Yeah, very, very nice. So classic French cooker is my first love after my wife, you could say. But that's my real passion. So cooking there, went to eat there, sorry, for dinner. And my wife, we were married at the time. And we walked in there. I'd been there a couple of times without my girlfriend at the time. Walked in there, and then just had one of the best meals ever. And then we got a tour of the kitchen, and it's on two floors. It was just one of those meals that it just sticks in the mind. I can remember what I ate.
What did you eat?
Well, they have a bread trolley there. So
exactly.
So your eyes lit up. They had a bread
trolley. Instead of a cheese trolley or a pudding trolley.
Well, there's a cheese trolley as well, and there's a petit four trolley as well.
Wow.
So I remember having his classic dish, which is soup of artichokes with foie gras and truffle butter. Then I had a poached turbot with hollandaise with crispy bacon, which was served in two different ways. And then he does a very famous dessert, pom pom pom, which is apple. Not people think it's potato, but it's not. It's apple. But yeah, just fantastic. And always bread trolleys. That was one of the most memorable meals I had. And I think it was there about 4.5 hours.
Wow.
But it was just stunning. Yeah. And I was lucky at Geese and Michel Brau as well. Sadly, he's handed back his stars. But top of the mountain in Laguiole, that was a fantastic meal as well. So I had a couple of some really top ones. Yeah.
What about eating out in London? Have you got any kind of hot spots?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're so lucky in London, aren't we?
Yeah,
the amount of places we have.
There's so much different choice.
You know, from Brick Lane to Mayfair. Mm-hmm. It, people tend to think, yeah, London's got a great food scene, but you have to pay for it. You can find some amazing places, you know, as a pop-up, as a, you know, as a street vendors, whatever. But I just think, from, you know, a bagel in Brick Lane.
So,
you know,
good.
It's so good. It's just one of those things, you know, if you ever come to London, you have to get down to Brick Lane, see the bagels, get in that queue, have your smoked salmon, have the brisket, whatever you want to do, but just things like that. Then restaurant terms, I like Rocker.
Yeah, I like Rocker.
I like eating Rocker quite a lot. Entrecote in Marylebone Lane, mm-hmm. you know, for one of good steak and chips. I quite like the sauce and the simplicity of just, you get what you're given, you get a salad if you don't like it or not. You choose again, going back to the French kind of way of cooking, you choose your steak, rare, medium, well done, you get the chips, and then there's a couple of classic desserts in there. But I, you know, as a chef, you try and eat in so many different places, and you're constantly, I'd say every fortnight, you're trying to eat something new all the time, but it's not always of the same cuisine or same standard or same price point. You're always trying to find new things, so yeah.
I guess to stay on top of your game then, really.
Yes and no, but I just love food. Mm-hmm. So eating out, for me, is so much enjoyment. So people always think, as a chef, you're going out to check competition. Yes, you pick up ideas. You know, it's like comparing two chefs to two artists. You either like that artwork on the wall or you don't. Sometimes you can't explain why you like
someone's style.
So, you know, there's no right or wrong in food. You know, either you like it or you don't. You know, the ones that you don't like might be the most technical bit of food you've ever eaten, but you just don't like it, which is fine. So as a chef, eating out in different places, you learn so much, you see difference, you meet some great people in our trade. There's a pop-up at the moment just round the corner from Sabor in South Regent Street called Pacific, which a young lad from Australia has come over.
Yeah, I've heard
amazing.
Lots about that. It's kind of like fusion sushi.
Sushi
is Australian meets
influence,
Japanese,
yeah.
isn't it?
And one of the best dishes I've tasted I ate there late 2019, but I would go in far and say I've already eaten my best dish of 2020.
What was it? Because I'm going to go there
it's
soon.
It's sprouts. It's roasted sprouts with kimchi.
Love a sprout. Sprouts do not get enough attention post-December.
You go and taste these sprouts. I hope, I said to him,
I just love it that your favourite dish is sprouts.
I said, do not take these off the menu. These are absolutely out of this world. And he looked at me saying, they're only sprouts. I was like, yeah, I know they're only sprouts, but the flavour off them. So yeah, roasted sprouts with kimchi. You just got to go out just for that. I was eating with my daughter. And literally, because, you know, sushi comes and when it's ready, by the time I actually got to him, she'd eaten the whole bowl. I had to order another one. So that tells you, if you can get
good taste,
get your daughter to eat green vegetables, they must be good.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Pacific, London. Okay, wonderful. So coming to the end, I always like to ask, what would be your top three ingredients that you advise to always have in the kitchen?
I think in the kitchen, as a chef, you always go salt, butter, mm-hmm. And it's like a rapeseed or an olive oil. I think if you have all that, there's, you can elevate a lot of dishes, mm-hmm. or get the best out of something by using those three ingredients. Yeah, so
salt, butter, oil. Yeah, I mean, key to life.
Yeah, they're key to life. Without them, you know, when people say no salt, you're thinking, you know, I remember working for Marco. He goes, "Oi, customers don't pay extra for salt, so season it."
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know,
they're
not going to put a supplement on it, so season the bloody thing. So salt just brings out flavour if you cook it properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you could have anyone in the world to your ultimate dinner party, three people, alive or dead, who would you have?
Do you know what, there's a lot to be said about this. As a massive sports fan, you know, I love, you know, Liverpool's my team, so, you know, having dinner with someone like Kenny Dalglish, Bruce Grobler, Ian Mulby, those, that kind of what. But obviously that would be amazing. But I'd never had all my grandparents in one room. You know, when I was born, my grandfather passed away, so I'd met three, but I'd not had all four of them. So for me, every time somebody asks me, I say, all my grandparents, just in a room, just for 20, just for dinner. Yeah. Just to have a chat, because as you get a bit older, you realise where you can. Somebody shaped you along the way.
Yeah.
And to have all them in one room, if somebody's listening to this and they're lucky enough to have all their grandparents in one room, just savour that moment, because not everybody has it.
Yeah.
For me, it had to be all my grandparents in one room.
That's really lovely.
Over dinner. Yeah.
I bet they'd have great stories as well.
Exactly. You want to hear those stories, yeah. When you know, how they're brought up and all the rest of it. So by having it, and I think as an adult, there's something a bit more special in it, mm-hmm. rather than a kid. Because a kid, you know, your grandparents babysit you,
get to
bed, they serve you rubbish food, whatever you think, you know. But as an adult, you just go, I'd really like to talk to them on a level. So I think my grandparents, all four in one room, and myself, that's it. I'll be happy.
Some scallops for supper.
Scallops and a glass of red.
Yeah, perfect.
I mean? I'll be happy. Yeah, yeah. Bit of bread.
Well, thank you so much. That was fantastic. And just for anybody who doesn't know, where can people come and eat your food? Where are your restaurants?
You can take your pick, really. So Odette's restaurant in Primrose Hill, which has been there for 12 years this year. If you ever go to up to North Wales, so we've got a nice little restaurant, well, bistro on the beach called Bryn Williams at Portheiras in Colwyn Bay. And the new one, which is called Bryn Williams at Somerset House, which is more, a bit more of a plant-based restaurant. So there's a little bit less meat and fish there, but a lot more plant-based. So
it's beautiful as well. The interiors are beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful around there anyway, isn't it?
It's a beautiful building, Somerset House. It's one of those iconic buildings of London, I think. It should be highlighted a bit more as well.
Yeah. Well, brilliant. Thanks for that.
Thank you much indeed.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you liked it, rate it, review it, talk about it, share it, and invite your friends round for supper. This has been a Studio 71 production. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.